Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Trump's three presidential campaigns stressed military non-intervention and anti-war sentiments. These sentiments were positively received by voters, and it was called America First. In power, America First means something very different. Is America First nothing more than a campaign slogan? Crosstalking America First, I'm joined by my guest, Janine Yunus in Washington. She is the National Legal Director of the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee. In Charlottesville, we have Lee Slusher. He is an intelligence and geopolitical risk expert, as well as CEO at BT Consulting. And in New Jersey, we cross to Chris Rossini. He is a senior fellow at the Ron Paul Institute for Peace and Prosperity. All right, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Janine, let me go to you first. I've watched many of your recent media appearances, and I feel like you're a kindred soul because there's so many people on the left that hate you, and there's so many people on the right that hate you, and we fall. I'm more conservative than anything else, but I agree with so many of your assessments, and that's why I'm really glad that you're on this program. Let's think back to the three presidential runs of Donald Trump. I think my description in the introduction was correct. He really went for the non-interventionist foreign policy, and people picked up on it. We have to remember, too, that Barack Obama did the same thing during his campaigns, and he didn't follow through. So keeping those campaigns in mind, how do you assess America First today? And if you want to throw in what's going on in Gaza, you're more than welcome to do it.
Well, I would say it's a complete betrayal of what he ran on and why people voted for him. I personally actually didn't vote for him. I voted third party, but I did want to give him a chance because he spoke a lot about non-intervention and a restrained foreign policy, and that's very important to me. So when he won, I thought, okay, you know what, I'll give him a chance. But then it was pretty clear early on that he wasn't going to stick to it. His choices for his cabinet were very telling, and so I lost hope very early on. And then, as you mentioned, with Gaza, what he did with Gaza, very clear, basically letting Israel do whatever they wanted at our expense, very clear that he wasn't going to stick to it. So I think it's all indicative of the fact that whoever you vote for, you get John McCain. I forgot who said that, maybe Scott Horton, but it's not really the people who appear to be running things that are running things. That's my opinion. There's something going on beneath the surface, and those motivations aren't going to change without something significant happening to the system.
Lee, was it just a campaign slogan after all? I mean, you know, I guess, you know, you can take someone on their word once, and I looked forward to a non-interventionist foreign policy. A lot of other baggage with Trump, well, you know, you always don't get what you want, but was this just a fraud from the beginning?
Yeah, I think the continued pursuit of hegemony really was the plan all along. And if we consider that populism really is, the essence of populism is that the elite have become so corrupt that they only care about advancing and protecting their own interests. And that's been the case in the U.S. for a long time. So populism sprung up on the left and right. And at least for now, left-wing populism has been kind of effectively excluded from the system. But Trump seems to have been the man to come in and kind of co-opt populism on the right, in particular this non-intervention sentiment. But the way in which he's governed has been the exact opposite. If we look at, you know, these negotiations that we're told take place, you know, with Russia and Ukraine or with Iran, these recent operation against Venezuela, or the actual embargo that's smothering Cuba, this is the exact opposite of everything we were promised. I don't think it was sincere.
Yeah, Chris, I mean, we were always told, part of the campaigns, the three campaigns, is that Trump again ran against what's called the deep state, the bureaucratic state, the permanent bureaucracy. It seems to me that he's leading it. He's not fighting it.
Yes. What ended up happening, and at the Ron Paul Institute, we were giving him a chance. We were actually praising him in the first month because he was doing some good things. And then I believe, and my memory, I hope, is serving me right, after that first visit of Netanyahu, and now we're up to visit 7, in 1 year, everything changed. Doge was kicked to the side, and once he attacked Iran, then we knew, you know, that the jig was up. And like our colleague said earlier, his appointments, Marco Rubio especially, at the very beginning was the first tip-off that, you know, this is not matching up with all of the dancing on the stage and all of the rhetoric. And he had all these big names, Elon Musk and Tulsi Gabbard and RFK. I mean, it was very exciting, but he's a salesman and he sold America a bill of goods that he has totally betrayed us on.
You know, Janine, it's growing up in America, we were never explained why we hate countries. Why do we hate Iran, okay? Or why do we are so submissive to Israel? It is a very politically illiterate media ecosystem. I mean, if you just scratch the surface on some of these issues, and it's not hard to do, you find that it is antithetical to anything that is even in America's interest. I mean, all these tariffs, there's no evidence whatsoever that it's creating industry in America. Not at all. There's zero evidence that it's helping the American economy. Janine.
Yeah, well, these ideas are sold to us, and propaganda is very effective. And frankly, most people just don't have time to do research into the issues. You know, no shade on them. They're busy taking care of their kids and putting meals on the table. So they don't really have time to look into everything beyond what they're told in media headlines. And it's very effective to just be told Iran is bad, Israel is good, Western democracy. And having those values instilled in you from school age, I think, actually works extremely well. And these people have figured that out. So that's really how this happens. And on something that was said earlier, I'm not sure, you know, I don't know Donald Trump personally. I'm not sure about his motivations. I think he may have had somewhat decent intentions and was unable to withstand pressure from within, you know, whether you want to call it the deep state and Miriam Adelson and all the funding he ended up getting from Israel. So I do think there may have been some sincerity to his earlier promises, but he just simply couldn't follow through.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you distill it down, Lee, the man's just interested in what he calls wins, okay? I mean, I think maybe what he thinks is the paradigm of his foreign policy is kidnapping foreign leaders. That's a win, okay? How it's a win for any of us, I don't know. He seems to think it's a win for his legacy, and maybe that's what he's chasing. Lee.
As Jen just said, you know, I don't know the man either. But that certainly seems to be the case. He seems to not take these things very seriously or to learn about them very deeply, and perhaps is more focused on perception and how everything can be spun to depict a win, as you just said. I mean, if we look at the fundamentals of the war in Ukraine, for instance, these negotiations have been going on under Trump's leadership for a long time now. We still supply weapons, we still supply intelligence, we still continue to ignore the core demands that Russia has to ensure its own security. So I think a lot of this might drag on simply because of the need for a win and the aversion to anything that can't be spun as such.
Yeah, if you're strong enough to withstand Trump, you will resist. If you can't, it's a different story. Chris, you know, the people that back Trump, you know, the more we look at it, you know, the tech bros, you know, it seems like there's a group of people that are making a whole lot of money off of his foreign policy. Trump pitched the oil of Venezuela to the oil titans, and they weren't very interested because they actually know something about Venezuelan oil. But it seems to me that Trump, he wants to curry favor with rich people. That's the people that he knows very well. Just check the Epstein files. Chris.
Yes, and that was the opposite of what Americans were expecting. You know, we were expecting to bring back the jobs, you know, that have been lost, even have the ability to create new jobs. And, you know, small businesses, mom and pops are suffering greater than ever. Manufacturing jobs have done nothing but go down during Trump's presidency. As you were talking about, he really just wants a good headline for the day. It's as if he doesn't think even a day later. As long as he can put something out and it could be ridiculous, he has an army of bots and real, you know, real people that will just magnify his winning, you know, these what he calls wins. And it doesn't have to have any truth to it. You know, whether it's the tariffs, whether it's we're not getting any oil from Venezuela, nobody's going to invest in there as of yet. And, you know, no jobs here. The tariffs have not hurt China one bit. They're doing better than ever. They're selling less to us.
Well, and
they're selling
and,
everywhere.
And Chris, acquiring Greenland would solve the middle class's problems, right?
Yeah, and that would be for the tech bros, you know, but how can they even put any trust into what he says? Because he could change it an hour later. There's no stability whatsoever with him. It's just, he has his finger in the wind for the moment, and he'll say what he has to say.
Yeah, Chris, I'm not really sure he's going to turn his back on money, okay? Because, you know, for all the meetings we see, like in Oman and all of that, what is Kushner and Witkoff doing? I think in the evenings, they're really doing business deals with their Arab friends, okay? And they can't get any success negotiating with the Iranians, but I'm sure they're doing real estate deals. Money seems to be the focus of this administration and the wealth of the Trump family as he moves on. Finish up there, Chris.
I agree with you. He's benefiting, you know, and I don't know that I don't get into the weeds, but with this whatever crypto coin he has, who knows what's going on with that, with world leaders, you know, shoveling money into that. So, yeah, him, his family, his closest associates are benefiting, and everybody else is along
for
the ride.
And where is all the money from the Board of Peace? Where is that going? That's going into a private bank account. I mean, talk about enrichment. All right, I'm going to interrupt myself, and we're going to go to a short break. And after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on America First. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing America First. Okay, let's go back to Janina in Washington. I must say one refreshing thing that has come out of this foreign policy of the last year or so is that we aren't constantly bombarded. We're doing it for democracy. We're doing it to save the children. We're save the women. It's literacy. Well, I got so tired of this from administration to administration. Yeah, you invade countries for literacy. Okay, I get it. All right. And most of these countries have resources. Okay. But that's interestingly absent in this administration. We don't hear those things, which they're speaking the truth. It's about national interest. How that's defined, it's a little bit different here. But one casualty is international law, and that's something that you know about. How is that detrimental to the global system as we move forward?
Well, I'm not sure that it's detrimental more than other people's foreign policy. In fact, I've said many times one thing I appreciate about Trump is he says outright what actually is going on with other administrations and is actually the motivation with other administrations. So at least he's not trying to lie to us about it. But of course, the counter argument to that, I'm sort of saying it tongue in cheek, the first part. The counter argument is that it is important to have international norms. And even when they're not necessarily being respected, at least giving some pretense of respecting them and say, you know, we don't invade other countries to take their oil, to loot them just because it benefits some rich people. Coming out and admitting that maybe does some harm. But on the other hand, I do think there's a benefit to his just admitting outright what's going on. And perhaps that will motivate the American public to stop electing people like this. Although that's another subject. I don't know if it's possible because I'm not sure that the people in power will allow us to have options who don't pursue these kind of detrimental policies.
Yeah.
Benefit just the very wealthy.
Yeah, and those same people, they're if you put an R after their name or a D or even an I, it's quite meaningless these days. And that's one thing that I think most voters understand now. How they resolve that, I don't know. And well, maybe there will be martial law and there will be no midterms. Who knows what's going to happen here? But Lee, this lack of recognition of international law, you know, who does it benefit? Again, and under Trump, it's for individuals. It's for very, very wealthy people. It's not about the national interest. The United States is awash with oil. It doesn't need oil, okay? But it wants to do is to disrupt the oil routes of other countries. His foreign policy, in many ways, is a policy of denial. Lee.
Yeah. In my view, there's no higher form of power in the West, at least not in a secular sense, than the banking cartel. I mean, the people in charge of our monetary supply, monetary policy, you know, they're not even government employees. It's a collection of banks. And so I think the things that we see play out in the foreign policy realm all are downstream from that. For instance, if we look at the countries we declare as enemies, or at least treat as such, they are primarily the countries that are outside the control of that system. So we have, you know, Russia, China, Iran. Okay, those are very hard targets. But if we look at Venezuela and Cuba, they've been outside of that system of control for quite some time. So now what are we seeing? We see Maduro get kidnapped. We see Cuba getting strangled. I think that it's easy to point to individuals enriching themselves, and that absolutely is happening. But I think they're doing that within the context of a broader kind of financial oligarchy that does the very same.
Yeah, Chris, if you look at Trump's approach to the Western Hemisphere, not only do they want pliant governments there, it looks like, and it's in the cards, that they want, for example, the Chinese to get out of the hemisphere altogether. And I think they're serious about it. And I think by the end of the year, we'll see major changes, possibly in Nicaragua, certainly in Cuba. Chris.
Yes. Venezuela, I believe, was to cut off partially China. They were getting about 5% of their oil from there. Iran is close to 20%. So if they disrupt Iran, which we're on the verge of, it looks like, now we're talking 25% of China's oil. So, yeah, I believe that America first was always American empire first. And I don't believe that there's any multipolarity, that America is just accepting that this is the world that's going to happen. I think they're fighting it. If anything, I believe they want to consolidate the Western Hemisphere for themselves so that they can then go after Russia and China. You know, once you have this globalist...
Chris, consolidate the Western Hemisphere. How does that help the average American?
Oh, no, I'm not in support of it. I'm just trying to
think
from
there. I'm not saying you are, but what I'm just saying is that how does it make America stronger, more prosperous, et cetera? And I think a lot of people are beginning to ask that question here. Okay, Maduro is in prison. What happened to the prices in the supermarket? Nothing.
Oh, no, we bear all the costs of this. It's all costs. The tariffs are all costs for us that we pay the taxes. But they have this ideology that they want to dominate the whole world. So I think they want Greenland, Canada for themselves to, you know, as you know, I'm speculating as to what they're thinking, so that they can have more resources at their disposal to ultimately take over the world, which I think they're going to fail. I'm just, you know, laying out a speculation here.
Well, I'm going to go much further. Janine, if you look at the tariff policy, for example, again, the attempts to control energy supply lines in routes around the world, the Nord Stream 2 is a good example, okay? Destroy it, all right? It seems to me that what Trump wants to do, because he thinks in terms of real estate and business and numbers and all of that, he wants the whole world to pay for American empire.
Yes,
that's
I agree.
Right.
Let me go to Janine. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this. And he thinks they're going to do it. But he is not taking into account the fact that it's not benefiting the average person, or maybe he doesn't care at all. And at some point, I think people are going to, they are waking up to the fact that this is extremely detrimental. And one benefit to the fact that he doesn't try to hide what he's doing as much as other presidents is that I think, people aren't being sold some story about democracy and how we're spreading democracy and we're saving the world or making us safer. They're just basically being confronted with the fact that this is benefiting the very wealthy at the expense of the rest of us. Perhaps that will lead people to want some change. I mean, I have to be somewhat hopeful, but it's...
Well, I mean, it's really hard to be hopeful. I don't want to be a wet towel here, but Trump's people, the Republicans in Congress, there may be only one use for them because they seem to be useless in every other respect. They'll be useful to Trump to get past a $1.5 trillion military budget. Now, that I cannot see how that's going to make America a better place for the average person. It's just going to cut a lot of social programs that many red states actually really like. There's this myth about, you know, the red states sucking up everything. They love these social programs. I cannot see how this is sustainable. $1.5 trillion?
It's not sustainable, and I think it's important to note that the people you've mentioned, these congressmen, I mean, they clearly don't care about the ordinary people or the impact that the lack of such programs would have. But I think it's important to remember that global hegemons don't relinquish control easily or willingly. They lash out, typically in increasingly desperate and dangerous ways. So the unipolar period is over. The U.S. remains one of the most powerful countries in the world. I'm not suggesting otherwise, but it lacks the ability to enforce its will in the way that it could for most of the post-Cold War period. But that message really hasn't sunk in on Capitol Hill in particular. I mean, just look at some of Trump's, let's say, mid-level Pentagon appointees, people who were not exactly doves, but who simply wanted to have a different approach as one that didn't pursue all of this intervention. They said, hey, we don't have the power we once did, and other people now have greater power and abilities. Maybe we should reconfigure. Even those people are the targets of pretty vicious campaigns for many people on Capitol Hill, including some of the most powerful senators. So I don't think this $1.5 trillion, you know, proposed defense budget has anything to do with the good of the people. I think it has to do with a desperate attempt to hold on to this fading hegemony.
You know, Chris, I mean, if you look at, in many ways, John Mearsheimer said on this program, I think about a week ago, that we have a new iteration of great power politics. And in the history of geopolitics is that great powers, oh, they will compete, but you avoid having a war with each other because a great power could lose. And I worry that Trump is going down this path. I think, you know, the fading empire and lashing out is very, very true. And that makes me really worried about what Trump may do in the name of a win.
Right. And he's on the verge of putting American troops who in the Middle East, 30 to 40,000, which I personally believe should not be there at all, their lives in danger and their families and us, our whole country could be in turmoil because Iran has said that they will attack U.S. bases if they are attacked. So now we're talking the peace president who had won all these bogus peace prizes, the only candidate that was supposed to keep us out of World War III on the doorstep of now caskets coming home. You know, and it's sad that Americans don't really seem to care if the caskets are Ukrainian or Gaza or anybody else, but they may start to care when their friends and family start coming home in caskets. And it's a sad thing that we're on the verge of that possibly happening.
And Janine, one good thing that's come about recently is the perception of Israel among the American public. It is descending. The pundits on cable TV keep trying to pass on Israeli propaganda. The American people aren't buying it. That is a silver lining.
That is certainly a silver lining, in my opinion. And the younger generation is not fond of Israel at all. Israel is getting increasingly desperate and resorting to very extreme measures to attempt to sort of control social media and the avenues through which people are exposed to information that conflicts with the pro-Israel narrative most Americans have been sold for their lives. So this is an important development. Now, I don't know if it will be reflected in our political class because there's so much power. These people have so much power. I think people are seeing with the Epstein files. I mean, it's really quite breathtaking just how much they're able to control things. And if we aren't given, if we don't have the option of candidates who are going to withhold military aid to Israel and that kind of thing, what are we going to do? If your only options are people who continue to support Israel, we don't really have any other choice. And the amount of control that the Israel lobby levies in this country is, I'm not sure that it can be done away with very easily.
Yeah, well,
regardless of public opinion.
We did learn from the Epstein files, all roads lead to Tel Aviv. Okay, on that point here, fascinating discussion. I want to thank my guests in Charlottesville, Washington, and in New Jersey. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, crosstalk rules.